Welcome back to the show. Ben Graham will be coming on a bit later on just to talk to you just to talk to you about the Tennessee Titans and this incredible story that's...
going to get a flight to Miami.
Taking place. Have you watched them play?
Yeah.
Have you actually watched them play?
No.
Right. What's this guy called Derrick Henry, this running back they've got?
DH.
Oh, mate.
We call him Hank.
For the second time today, Bob, ditch Andy, get homicide full time. So I'm out twice today. People are saying the Bob and Max Gorn show. Now they're saying the Bob and Corey Homicide Williams show.
Corey's like Jerry Lee Lewis. Nobody follows the killer. You can't. He's like a weather system that comes and blows in and then blows through.
If I wasn't so,
you don't sit next to it for too long.
Desensitized to horrible stuff coming through off the old speckled text machine, I might be starting to get a complex. How was he when just before you had to Rolodex Roulette? All roads, by the way, lead to Essendon BMW. Visit us today. How was he?
When he holds the microphone like Elvis, when he starts to sort of move it around,
stands up,
and he stands and turns side on,
pushes the chair back,
points at you for the just so anyone listening out there, just so you know the picture, he stands up and points at Andy, no matter what the conversation is.
How much is he barracking for Sean Long?
I didn't really
to
get
just
that.
Give it to Andrew Bogan on the weekend. I'm watching that game on 5:30.
I'm watching
5:30 Saturday. I'm watching that game. Kids, don't ask me to do anything if you're listening. No. Hopefully you're not. Oh, no, they'll be at home. Don't ask me to do anything
I'm
at 4:30.
Pour two big boxes of cheesels.
Oh, mate.
In the other lounge room. There you go, kids.
Righto.
Dad's busy.
Rolodex Roulette. We're back. Okay, so most people know what goes on here. In case you're new to the show.
What if it lands on Andrew Bogan?
Oh, my God. And there's every chance. Well, I've got thousands of names. So over the journey here at SEN, all names of all manner of people involved in sport and beyond have been added to our data bank. We have a mechanism where we spin the machine, if you like, and it finishes on a name. And whoever that name is, we give them a call. And if they answer the phone, we have a chat. So we... spin the Rolodex. Make it sound like a roulette table, of course. It's not what it sounds like out there at all.
Oh, it does.
Doesn't. It does. Stops on a number.
What do we got?
Who we got, Clarkie?
This is I live for this bit.
Bill Mildenhall, the former footballer, NBL.
No, referee.
NBL ref.
Yeah.
Played 80, 90, what do you play, 100 games for St Kilda?
Football?
Yeah, he's a good footballer, Billy Mildenhall.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Right, we better give him a call, see if he answers the phone. Oh, I know he played a lot of footy. He would have played with Barks and Trevor and...
So what are we talking, like 70s, 80s?
I'm going to reckon late 70s, yeah. G'day, can we speak to Bill Mildenhall,
hello,
please?
Billy Mildenhall.
Billy,
hello.
Bill, it's Andy Marr and Bob Murphy, SEN Drive, mate. How are you going?
Who?
Right. Sorry. We should. Not everyone's going to know who we are. Andy Marr and Bob Murphy, Bill. We do the drive show on SEN. We're live on air at the moment, mate. How are you going?
I'm great. Are you sure you got the right number here?
Yes, Bill. We do. We have a segment. We pick someone out of the old data bank and we give them a call and we see if they're up for a chat. Have you got 5 minutes for us this afternoon?
Yeah, I'm just about to. Oh, we've got a basketball meeting, but I'm sure I can spare a few minutes. That's not a problem.
Bill, how are you? Well, you must be in your mid 60s these days, are you? How are you travelling?
Well, it depends who's listening. I'm 66. Yes.
You've always been magnificently fit. You've always worn a very tight shirt in the NBL refereeing days. You've always looked in magnificent nick. If you're in the black strides and the NBL ref shirt right now, would you still be cutting that same figure?
I would struggle big time, mate. Struggle big time. Yeah. I like to say that I'm an athlete, but I'm a former athlete. And certainly not one now.
Hey, Bill, can I ask you, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us. We just had Corey Homicide Williams in our studio, who was very fired up talking about Sean Long and Andrew Bogut. We had Andrew Gaze yesterday in the studio chatting about some basketball stuff. You were a referee through the golden era of the NBL. What are your memories of that time? I know you refereed for such a long time, but that early mid-90s period NBL was huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was sensational. I was sort of unheralded for us. And, you know, like to give you an example, we moved from the Olympic, you know, the old Olympic swimming pool. We moved from there across the road to the Rod Laver Arena. And I'll never forget having two home teams playing off in a home and away game. And we had 15,500 people there. And I remember in one of the teams was Melbourne Tigers, of course. And yeah. Andrew and Lindsay Gay sort of came up to me and just said, "Hey, Billy, have a look at this. How fantastic is this?" He was just blown away. He couldn't care less about the result of the game, but just more concerned about the number of people that were at the game.
Can you remember how spirited did that the rivalry between the Tigers and the South East Melbourne Magic, that was must-watch sport on TV back then. How spirited were the players on the court? Was there plenty of talk back then?
Yeah, there's always been that back chat and sort of... I mean, from a refereeing perspective, we try to eliminate that as best you can because you know that there's a chance it's going to then escalate into something more.
How would you kind of put an end to it?
You just got to jump in and tell them to shut up and pull their heads in. You know, yep. That's pretty much all it is. Not that they take any notice of it, but it looks like, from our perspective, it looks like we're trying to address it rather than just let it get out of hand.
Who gave you the hardest time from that era, Bill?
What, with back chat?
Yeah. Who would sort of push the line with you a bit?
Oh, probably the one that always comes to mind is Shane Heal. Always made things pretty difficult for him.
Of course he did.
I mean, I was good mates with Shane and I'd travelled overseas with him on a few trips and a few occasions, but that sort of didn't make any difference. He certainly expressed his feelings pretty and let you know how he felt about what you'd called without too much hesitation.
Bill, what was your, before we got to the bigger stadiums for NBL games, you would have been refereeing, I think I'm right, my timelines are a bit hazy, but I imagine you would have been refereeing games back at Albert Park and down in Geelong and some of the venues back then that were much smaller by today's standards. Did you have a favourite? Where was the best atmosphere?
Oh, it's hard to go past. It was really difficult to go past Albert Park when Albert Park was full. I mean, I don't even know how many it held, probably only about 500 or 600 people.
Yeah.
But when it was full and they'd be spilling out all over the place, you know, at the end of the courts and onto the court, and it was nothing, you know, to be running down the sideline and knock somebody over carrying a couple of drinks and stuff.
Right.
You know, like it was, you just had to avoid, you had to avoid not only the players on the floor, but you also had to avoid the spectators and the, you know, them encroaching onto the floor as well. So that was pretty exciting in those sort of, in that smaller venue. And the thing about that is you could also, which is probably not a good thing, but you could actually hear the comments from the crowds a lot clearer than you can from a bigger venue.
So, Bill, I remember those days. I had a mate of mine who was playing at Melbourne Tigers in, you know, some of their junior teams, and we used to go and watch games at Albert Park. And I remember guys like, you know, Benny Lewis and, you know, Leroy Loggins in the early days and James Crawford. And we're spending so much time talking about, you know, RJ Hampton and LaMelo Ball at the moment. But of the imports that came out in the early days of the National Basketball League, who was the one that you used to look at and go, gee, this guy's a good player?
Probably the one you mentioned was James Crawford. I mean, James Crawford was just an outstanding athlete that was just so skilled. And I guess we were probably blessed because we hadn't seen anyone that size and that athletic and that skilled sort of in this country. And when he came out here and decided to stay for a long period of time, I mean, he was enormous. There was, along the way, though, Andy, there were so many great imports that just seemed to appear. And Australia even gained the benefits of some of those by, you know, they ended up playing for Australia as well. You know, even a little later than that, and we just had a reunion the other last week with North Melbourne, and there was Scott Fisher. Oh. You know, like, he's an outstanding player, you know, like... incredible play, and then he ended up playing for Australia, you know, with getting naturalised and so on.
I've just called up you some stuff. Not only, you know, were you a stalwart of the refereeing game at National Basketball League standard, but you went to the Olympics twice as a ref back in Barcelona and Sydney. What were those experiences like?
Both very different. I mean, if you can remember back to Barcelona, that was the first time that the Dream Team played.
Yeah.
So that was the likes of Michael Jordan.
Oh, of course.
Did you get to do an American game?
Yeah, I did the second game that they played against Germany.
Yeah,
so that was pretty enormous, you know, like to sort of walk out. I mean, you're just like a kid in a candy store. I'm standing there amongst these absolute, you know, heroes that that you just, and mind you, I had to look up to because they're all much taller than I am. I'm getting a tip. But, yeah, that was an incredible experience.
God, that so you are on the same floor. That my
the
memory.
The greatest team that ever was.
The greatest team that ever was. I mean,
absolutely.
How hard is it for you to kind of get out of fan mode and just click? I mean, you're a pro, so it wouldn't have taken you. You probably didn't have any time to do that at all. You would have been in go mode right from the word go. But do you find yourself just at times in the balls up the other end and maybe not your call just? Kind of having a look at these.
Well, you're
guys.
A spectator.
Yeah,
you end up
yeah.
being a spectator, like half the time. I mean, I had a fairly interesting experience with that game. This is a Tuesday. I was refereeing with a Chinese guy by the name of Zhu. And before we went out onto the floor, the guy in charge of the officials came in to speak to us and said, look, did you see the American game, the first game? And we said, yeah, of course we did. And he said, well, look, I think that Charles Barkley's been hanging on the ring. I want you to take foul him. And I said, oh, yeah, that's great. And he's looking straight at me. I look across to my mate, Zoo. Zoo's got no idea what he's talking about. So I sort of thought, oh, my God, you know, here I am, a little bloody battling Aussie, kind of go out there and tick fell back. So we went out on the floor, and this is true. We introduced ourselves to the coaches, and the coach of the US was Chuck Daly. And I went up to him and said, oh, good luck and whatever. And I said, look, I've just been instructed to tech Barkley, if he hangs on the ring, do you mind if you say something to him? And he said, throw the mother out of here. We don't want him anyway.
that's fair, Nick.
And I promise you that's true. That's gospel.
That is a good.
And so they were having trouble controlling his behaviour as well. And so obviously they weren't too keen on him either. And so then I'm going, my God, you know, what am I now going to do? Here I am trying to eliminate something. And I mean, as it turned out, there was an incident in the game where he actually dunked the ball and didn't really hang on the ring. But at the same time, they'd call the timeout. And so the timeout signal and the technical foul signals are very similar. So I called the timeout, and he thought I was calling a technical foul on him. So he's just gone bananas. And then he's standing over the top of me swearing and carrying on. I said, no, it's not a technical foul. I said, by the way, though, you could get a technical foul for now what you're saying to me. But so we just carried on and just gave the time out.
Hey, Bill, we're a sports radio station. We're all sports lovers. How does the experience of sharing the court with the Dream Team, how does that compare with having 34 touches against the Demons back in the 70s for your beloved Saints?
Jeez, you must have dragged some.
I've been feverishly tapping away on the keyboard here, Bill.
Oh, God. Yeah, you sure? I'm not too sure. That'd be too accurate. Well, it's just, you just can't compare. I mean, I was never lucky enough to play in a final, you know, with the seniors. I played in the grand final, the reserves, but nothing compares to, like, just the Dream Team, knowing full well that you've got not only the number of people who are watching at the venue, but just the millions of people that were watching around the world. It was just incredible. Once you get out on the floor, you just
try to
sort of switch off and just try as best you can. I think they got the closest. I think the closest any team ever got to them was about 34 points or something.
Yeah, there you go. I'm not surprised with that caliber of talent on the floor. You played. Bob's brought your footy up. I'm looking at the numbers now, Billy. You played 77 games for the Saints in a couple of stints. Where did your footy journey start? Where did the Saints pick you up from?
Oh, I was the old story. I played at St Kilda City, which is my local footy club, and I was born and bred in St Kilda, and St Kilda was my team. And I went to St Kilda Park Primary School, which was across the road from the Fitzroy Street ground.
Yeah.
You know, so across the park. And so every Tuesday and Thursday night, I'd wander across after school and kick the ball back over the fence, you know, when they'd come over and just watch them train. So for me to be invited down to St Kilda, just the under-19s, was, you know, I was just a kid in the candy store. That was just massive magic for me. And then I went down 1 year and I didn't stick it at down at 19s for that first time. I went down the second year and stayed around, and then sort of just stuck around for about 10 years of, you know, in and out of the first and whatever in the reserves.
There aren't many more loved players anywhere by the club faithful than Trevor Barkley. You must have played, well, you would have played a lot of footy with him and shared the locker room, you know, with him for a long time, all those years here at the footy club, Bill. When you remember Barks, what do you remember of him?
He was just the top guy. He was just such a, you know, a likeable person, both on and off the ground. I mean, I don't think I ever sort of saw anyone, you know, that would say anything poorly about him. And I played beside Barks a number of times, being in the back pocket, and he was playing at fullback on lots of occasions. I can tell you one story with Barks. This is how remembering St Kilda weren't overly successful during that period of time. So it was all very much and Bob, you'd probably understand this, that sometimes it's a matter of survival. You want to sort of do enough to get picked the next week, because that was our mentality a little bit. And Barks, in those days, I think it was the Sunday Observer, they'd had the stats. They started to put stats in the paper, but they'd only put the handballs. They wouldn't put them quarter by quarter. They just put the total number of handballs. So at one stage in the first quarter, it was getting late in the quarter, and I'd run past Barks to get a handball, and he didn't give it to me, which was unusual for him. And so he came up to me at quarter time and apologised. He said, "Mate, I didn't have a kick on the stats. And if it, you know what it looks like, it looks so bad if you don't get a kick in one quarter."
That's amazing.
But he was, you know, like he was just apologetic and, you know, saying, "Oh shit, you know, we didn't tell the coach this." Of course, at that stage, we were in real trouble.
Are you still involved? Do you still catch up with the old St Kilda boys at all, Billy? Is there still a connection there?
I do actually, and in fact, the last Friday we actually had a former player function, which I couldn't go to because we actually had a reunion of our basketball, the 1989 Coburg basketball team's premiership. So they actually had a function as well. So, but last Wednesday we caught up with our Cowboy Neil and Barry Brandon. They organised it. Cowboy's sort of going through a little bit of ill health in terms of the early stages of Alzheimer's. And so Barry Breen sort of rang around a number of people to try and, you know, sort of catch up with him. So we went to all places to Beechworth, and Breeny initially had about half a dozen people or 10 people that were going to attend. And then all of a sudden it ended up being about 55 people that all made the effort to get to Beechworth. Three or four guys came from Perth, three or four from Adelaide, guys from Sydney. And even the amazing thing was that Peter Hudson turned up, which was just unbelievable, you know, because Cowboy played so many games and smashed him on numerous occasions, and he turned up as well.
Gee, that's amazing. That says a lot about the bonds that you make, Bill, in pro sport, whether it be, you know, blowing the whistle as a ref or being part of it all as a player at St Kilda. The memories you must have, they must be enormously valuable and treasured.
Yeah, they are, and you're right, and you've sort of just highlighted that's what team sport's all about, and camaraderie amongst the group, you know, and maybe if someone's in a bit of not in the best of positions, you know, that you'll make a huge effort to get to catch up with them. So it was a great day. It was a really good day.
Bill, there's a lot of feedback coming off off the speckled text machine here. People just loving the stories, and everybody's demanding that we get you back in here for a longer chat about that experience at the Barcelona Olympics. And I imagine Sydney must have been amazing as well. So maybe we need to get you back in here for a chat specifically about that one of these days. It's been a joy hearing your voice on the show today. Thanks for taking the call and being part of it.
Okay, guys, thanks very much. I'll get to my meeting now.
Good on you, Bill. Probably kept you for a bit longer than we should have. Bill Mildenhall all joining us.
What a gentleman.
Absolutely. Hey, Charles Barkley, gold from 1992 Olympics on the other side of this. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Ben Graham, not too far away.